welcome to Season 8, Episode 36 of the Ubuntu Podcast. We're still at Odd Camp in Liverpool, and we're recording in a dining room table, and in this episode we're going to be discussing Odd Camp. We're also going to go over your feedback. I'm Laura, and joining me this week are, of course, Alan.
Hello.
Martin.
Hola.
And Mark.
Hello.
So, what have we all been up to since last time? Mark.
It's weird, when you can see each other, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't like it.
You'd think it would be easier.
Yeah. I have been playing with KDE Connect. Well, I've not been playing with it, I've been using KDE Connect.
What is it?
KDE Connect is a tool which you can install on your Linux desktop, laptop, whatever, and on your Android phone. And it connects your phone to your computer, which allows you to do things like have your notifications from your phone pop up as notifications on your desktop. It allows you to send files both ways. It allows you to have a synced clipboard between your phone and your desktop.
Ooh,
which is magic.
That's like proper convergence almost.
Mm. Show your face.
As the name suggests, it's a KDE app, but there's also an app indicator which implements an interface to it on non-KDE desktops.
So I could run it on like Ubuntu or Mate or whatever.
Yes, you can.
Huh.
Yes.
Now, the only drawback with the indicator at the moment is there's been a slight API bump in KDE Connect, and the indicator's slightly behind. So there's a couple of features that don't work reliably in the indicator, but they're aware, and I see that that's going to be revised.
Cool.
But it's like Pushbullet, but open source without going through a third-party service.
Nice.
Yeah, so you can connect. I think I've done it with my phone connected to the same Wi-Fi as my laptop. It's not connected directly to the laptop. I think you can also do it over Bluetooth if you've got decent Bluetooth support,
which we do now in 15.10.
Excellent.
So, speaking of convergence, Alan.
we had the convergency stuff land in the Nexus 4 images last week, and it now functions. You plug it into a desktop and a display, and you know, can use it like a desktop computer. So I've been playing with that a lot over the last few days.
Oh, I just go out.
Well, also that, and also discovering the peculiarities of it, and you know, it's not finished, so it's like the first iteration of it landing on the phone. So next over-the-air update, which is scheduled for November 18th, it will go out to anyone using it on a Nexus 4. So if you have a Nexus 4 running Ubuntu on the stable channel, and you plug a phone into a display, it will do it.
Just the Nexus 4.
Only the Nexus 4 and Nexus 7 are capable of doing video out over the USB port. The other phones aren't wired up to do it, unfortunately. It's a bit of a shame.
You say the Nexus 7 is capable.
Yep.
It works.
Yes.
All right, good.
Yeah. I wasn't being like careful with my words there. Yeah. It was just, those two can, the others can't.
Yeah, they've got the capability. Yeah. And anyone in the UK who might want to try this, Argos are selling Nexus 7s for about £100 at the moment, end of line stock. So if you want to grab one quickly, then now's the time to do it.
The Nexus 7 is quite good because it's tablet sized, so has a nice decent resolution screen compared to the Nexus 4. It's quite good.
And that's what you've been demoing at Odd Camp?
Yep.
Cool. And Martin?
I have been preparing Odd Camp talks.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, we all presented Odd Camp talks.
We
this
did.
Year.
We were good Odd Camp citizens, weren't we?
We were.
Maybe we should talk more about Odd Camp.
That's a good idea.
Let's do that. Let's talk about Odd Camp. we all came to Odd Camp in Liverpool. Myself, Laura, Mark and Martin all staying in a luxury Airbnb house.
And it's pretty good, actually.
It is. Yeah. It's brilliant. It's a great way of doing it.
I wouldn't say luxury. I think you're over it. We're in a house.
Right. It's good.
Okay. So it's in Liverpool, and the sponsors for the event were Entroware, who were there with their computers and Steambox and Steam Link, Steam Controller.
Some of the stuff we've reviewed before on the show.
Yeah.
Hardware.
Some stuff we haven't.
Yeah. Ubuntu, supported by Canonical. And Fedora were also sponsors. So we had a table opposite each other.
Yeah.
You were nerf gunning each other?
No, we didn't nerf gun. We did swap badges and pens as peace offerings.
Did you play a game of football in No Man's
Land? The Linux Voice guys were here.
Yeah.
And obviously the Open Labs people who ran the event. Or gave us the venue for the event.
Yeah. It really is an amazing venue there. Just it is. Because it's a university, you just have everything set up that you need for people to give talks and good spaces for people to mill around in. And
it's a super modern building, so it's not like your kind of old 60s university building where you sort of like poke you like an old school or something. Yeah. It's just a really nice open glass, airy.
Working Wi-Fi.
Yes.
You know.
Edge your arm all the way.
So what was the highlights for you?
I did some interviews, which will happen in a later show. I did an interview with Entroware about the hardware which they're bringing out now and their Steam Box.
Nice.
I also spoke to a bit about what's involved in making a Steam Box.
Uh-huh.
And I did an interview with Ragworm, who've been exhibiting at Ogcamp for several years now, who make PCBs bespoke for hobbyists and other people about what they do.
They make all the Pimarinis.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that, and just talking to all the people who were exhibiting was great. I saw some good talks as well. What did everyone else think of the talks?
Yes, there were some excellent talks.
Yep.
I particularly enjoyed Ben Nuttall's GPI Zero talk.
Yeah,
that was today, Sunday.
That was
really good. Last Sunday or whatever
it was.
On the Sunday of Ogcamp.
Yes. That was really interesting because I didn't really realise that to use the GPIO pins on the Raspberry Pi at the moment, you currently have to, so for some things like if you want to dim an LED, you have to understand some electronics concepts.
Yes.
And you know, there's quite a lot of setup to do to get GPIO pins working, which one of the things that Ben said is, when you're trying to teach kids who are just learning to program how to do this, it's really hard to say, don't worry about those lines there. You don't need to understand them. You just need to do them every time. Whereas this GPIO Zero library abstracts all of that away. So right. You just have an object called button and you say which pin it's on. And then you say button dot when pressed this other function, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like just the APIs that he showed us, it's all just super simple and super obvious what you're doing and why you're doing
it. You can focus on the logic that you want to implement, not how you
do
program
it.
Did you see anything you liked, Alan?
Yeah, I one of the stands was some radio amateur guys, radio hams. There was one guy sat there with his headphones on and turning dials, and there were these giant antennas out in the car.
Oh, is that what they were?
Yeah, those bipolar antennas.
They weren't trying to catch flying. Like,
no, I didn't know if they were like always there. I didn't realize they'd be put up specially.
Yeah, I somehow managed to spot them. But so one of the guys showed me how you can use a USB stick, like a DVB television USB stick, connected to a tiny little antenna on a baking tray, and pick up the transponder data from aeroplanes that are flying overhead.
That's the ADS-B data.
Yeah, and he had a piece of software, free software. He was running it on Windows, but I think there's Linux versions as well, that takes that data and plots it on a map, so you see little pictures of planes, and then or like icons of planes, and which way they're flying. City. Yeah, and on the side there's the flight data, and then like a photo of the plane, like not as it's in the air, but you know, past historical photos of that plane. It was just quite interesting, and we only saw like a few planes because the building we were in was like quite metallic, and so you didn't get very good reception. But he said that a lot of people like run this kind of stuff and collect this data and like, aggregate it, and so you can see where all the planes are at any point in time.
Some of the organisations that do that flight tracking, flight following apps, they will actually send you equipment to set up and do this and join their network to improve the coverage of their flight tracking, flight following app. So in particular, if you're an unusual part of the world where they don't have coverage, they'll send you, you know, the equipment to do this.
Oh, right. I was fascinated that it was just so... He said that the antenna that he made to get it working was basically two 10 centimeter bits of bare wire that he attached to the BNC connector on the antenna on this USB stick. And that was enough to get flight data.
Wow.
It's super easy. And I think I'm going to be investigating that because I've got a little drawer with a couple of these DVB sticks. Some are supported, some aren't. But it was fascinating just to watch the planes on the map, you know, flying overhead. It's rather cool. What about you, Laura?
Pardon?
What about you, Laura?
I didn't actually see that many talks. I somehow managed to miss them because I kept standing chatting to people.
Yeah, that's also one of the best bits about Occam, is it's meeting everybody.
Yeah.
Yesterday afternoon, I seemed to spend the whole afternoon just standing in front of the board that had all the post-its on because I kept looking to see what I wanted to go to, and then somebody I knew turn up and we'd just stand there chatting and never miss the next talk. So
yeah, I mean, I was saying to someone, chatting to somebody who said that they had been to Occam in the past where they just not seen any talks, they just chat to people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, well, you know, an event where you can do that, not see any of the talks, but still have a really good time.
That's really cool.
It's really good.
I spent all of the Saturday on the Ubuntu stand, so I didn't actually see any of the talks on Saturday. One of the community members, Daniel Wood, bought in a display, and we had it attached to his Nexus 4 and his little modified Nexus 4 docking station. He actually fitted a SLIM port inside the charging dock for his Nexus 4 to turn it into like a docking station for docking to a display. And it showed off, you know, what convergence is really well. You know, people would come up and go, oh, is that running off of that phone? And as soon as you see
really good.
The phone and the display next to each other with a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard, it's like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
I see. And, you know, it's unstable and it was, you know, it's an early build. So, you know, we were like, don't unplug the phone.
Unstable how? Because I had to go and I didn't break or fall over or anything.
You didn't unplug the phone from the docking station. If you do that and then plug it back in again, what you would expect and in the future will happen is it will just seamlessly flip back and forth. But that's not perfect yet.
I used to own a VIC-20. I was taught from a very young age, never remove a cartridge from a computer when it's
off. Yes.
Yes, I think we should mandate that.
So did anyone get to Stuart Langwich's podcast talk?
Yes.
He did
a really interesting talk. So Stuart Langwich does a podcast called Bad Voltage, which he is responsible for actually publishing the show. Once they've mixed it and got the compressed Ogg and MP3 files, they publish it in several places, including on a WordPress blog and on YouTube. And there's a few other things they do as well. Now, he doesn't like doing the same thing twice if he can get away with it. So his rule is that if he has to do it twice, he writes a script to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been looking into the various APIs of the various things he wants to post the show to, and has a script for his setup where he creates a text file which contains the show notes and puts that in a folder with the audio files, and then runs the script, and it connects to YouTube, and it connects to WordPress, and it connects to the Discourse forum, and it posts it to all of these places for him. So he doesn't have to each time log into the websites, keep YouTube open while it re-encodes the file, and so on.
That's really cool.
So the reason that he was doing the talk was because he knew there are lots of other podcasters there like us,
right?
Who might benefit from doing things better, and there are probably better ways of doing things than he's done them. So he wants people to look at what he's done and perhaps try and build something more useful generally.
And this was a great example of an Ogg camp talk, because it was from a conversation on the Friday night where he let slip, I've got tools to do this, and it was like, well, that should be a talk. So not only did he turn up, I think it was the first talk of the day, or the first talk I saw that day, and not only had he got a presentation prepared loosely, but like I said, 3 hours ago, it was committed to GitHub. So he stripped out all of the access tokens and passwords and put it into GitHub. He has explained it's largely hard-coded for Bad Voltage's purposes, but the principles are all there. So there was four or five podcasters at the end of that debating how we can work together to turn this into a general-purpose tool that we can all benefit from.
That's really cool.
And the other thing that he was talking about, where Jono Bacon, who's also on Bad Voltage, wanted to put the podcast on YouTube, and Stuart wasn't really sure about that, but acquiesced and did it. and Bad Voltage have doubled their audience since they've started publishing their podcast on YouTube. So I think that got a lot of the podcasters thinking about where we should probably adopt YouTube as well.
Yeah.
Mm. There was also a few other interesting hardware hacky things. There was a guy who had some Nerf guns.
Yeah.
And it was a little contest where you shoot some targets and it's all computerized. It has piezo sensors in the targets and they're all connected via Arduinos to a system that would record your score. Mm. So you shoot these Nerf bullets at the things and it would record your score and assign it to you and tweet it to you when you got the score. And if someone else beat your score, it would let you know that someone's beat you and you'd have to come back and beat the score. And so they were running a little contest over the weekend of OddCamp to win some cool Nerf gun stuff. Yes. It was a great idea because
it was like a great hack.
Nerf guns, like typically, you know, people fire them at each other, but having a, you know, some kind of electronic thing that can record your accuracy and report online and stuff. Yeah. I thought it was really cool.
And the winners of the, there were three winners who were three kids who had discovered an exploit in the system and taken advantage of it to score at something around half a billion points each. So, whereas I think I scored 16,000.
On my first go, I scored minus 140.
Yes. I think I managed 7 the first time I tried it.
Yeah, that was a very OddCamp victory, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like within 200 of each other, about half a billion. And everyone else is in like the tens of thousands. Yeah.
I'm wondering if that was some sort of integer overflow thing which they managed to find.
I don't know, but I think it was great that it was the kids that were mostly playing on that over the course of the weekend, and it's the kids that won all the prizes and took all of the goodies home with them. And great.
What else did we see at OddCamp? There was a panel discussion. There was yourself, Stuart Langridge, Ben Everard from Linux Voice, and Peter Cannon,
hosted by Joe Rasmussen.
And it was quite a lengthy discussion about privacy.
Well, the premise of the panel was there's no such thing as the cloud, it's just someone else's computer. But that quickly evolved into a discussion about privacy of personal data, what people do with it, why people don't seem to be worried about using systems which are getting routinely compromised and their data stolen. It's quite a lengthy debate. We got a lot of really good audience participation in it.
Quite passionate audience participation as well.
And lots of varied opinions as well, which was good. It wasn't just everybody shouting the same thing.
Yeah.
I think even though we were a group of people that largely shared a viewpoint, I think it was quite balanced as well.
Yeah, it wasn't just preaching to the choir.
No.
I thought it was interesting. I guess it didn't touch on other aspects that you might have thought of with cloud, as like the usability of it or the convenience and all that sort of thing. That wasn't really touched upon, why people do use the cloud and why.
Yeah.
And what clouds they use and things. It just became very focused on privacy, which is presumably just original thinking, but that wasn't what the statement was about. It was about cloud itself, wasn't it? I going back to the Nerf gun thing, next to that was the funky little art installation. Actually, that was really cool. It was just all these little tiny white, like, little tiny kites, maybe the size of a hand.
I did see them, but I didn't pick up what that was.
So if you blew on them, the lights flickered on.
Oh.
So the lights were responding, and it wasn't responding to movement.
No, it was
cleverer than that.
It was a diode that had a wire wrapped around it that would heat the diode up.
That was it.
Oh, and when you blow on it, it would reduce the temperature.
Oh,
and when it reduced the temperature, the lights would twinkle.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Really, really pretty. I really like that. It was a commissioned piece of work that they'd done.
Yeah.
But it was really nice. You could just like stand there and just blow it and all these little lights twinkle. And, and it was just a little, I think it was an Arduino, tiny little
Arduino
with just a couple of extra components. That's really all it was, and a bunch of LEDs. And, you got quite an interesting light installation. There was also, next to that, there was a 3D printed knitting machine.
That was 3D printed, was it?
Well, components of it were 3D printed.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It was rotating round and making kind of like a sock.
Yeah,
it was like, French knitting, wasn't it? Like you do on a,
oh, yeah, on a bobbin
with pins in it. Right. Yeah. But big.
And it would just, I mean, all the technology was really just turning this thing around.
And then it was weighted to pull it down
while the wool was knitting.
As the thing went round, it had little hooks that went up and hooked the bit of wool and pulled them down over the pins. It just kept doing that as it went around.
Yeah.
It was really quite mesmerising. It was.
You could just sit and watch it for a very long time. And then every so often they have to stop it when there's a dropped stitch partway around. You have to stop it so it doesn't all tear apart and then fix it with little hooks. But it was quite interesting that you know, once they built this thing, he said, we're not actually sure what we're going to do.
Create massive socks.
Sometimes it's not the destination, it's just the journey.
Yeah.
It was excellent. It was really nice to see a diverse set of projects. You go from radio hams to, you know, PCB printed circuit boards to knitting and Nerf guns and lights and...
board games as well.
There was someone there who has a company or project called Tangmu Games. So he does paper craft, like paper toys, but he also designs games. And so he did a presentation about a game which he describes as a cross between Consequences and Pokemon. And also
neither of which I played. So.
And also a board game he's made called Bar Bar Boom Sheep, where you play as a tank trying to protect a meteorite from exploding sheep along with other people, but you've also got to try and steal the meteorite at a certain point in the game. Sounds brilliant. Yeah.
Awesome.
So were there any other talks people went to?
I went to the talk on two-factor authentication where they presented the FIDO F2A, which had seemed to be very, very, very well supported by corporate organisations and banks. And some people were a little bit unsure about, because of the sort of organisations behind it. So I think this was another one where the idea had been sparked by a conversation the night before. So John Spriggs did it with another guy. I'm sorry, I don't know his name. So Speaker One presented the F2A stuff, and then John Spriggs was presenting Squirrel, you know, an open source equivalent that did the kind of same thing. And that was a good one. So this was looking into passwordless, you know, authentication and things like that.
Mm. Cool.
I think that wraps up everything about Hotcamp.
Yeah.
Except the beer.
We had a lot of fun.
Now it's time for your feedback. Chris emailed in.
Your discussion about Ubuntu on phones led me to buy a device just for the fun of seeing the development of the system on a day-to-day basis, install every OTA update and watch how new things emerge. I would like to buy a phone which will not be dumped and left to the community. The ideal thing for me to buy a device which is mainly used by developers of the system. Is the Nexus 4 still in the hands of developers, or have they moved on to something else? They're quite cheap these days and would fit my budget. I would be grateful for some assistance in my quest to buy the best possible Ubuntu phone for a long-term perspective. So, as an employee of Canonical, I should say, go and buy a BQ phone, because then the sales of BQ phones are reflected, and, you know. If you're an enthusiast, then a good low-cost way to get in is the Nexus 4, especially as we've already talked about, that's the one phone at the moment that supports the external display. So that's quite cool. Yeah. And you can get them quite cheap. And it, at this moment in time, is the primary target for that convergence stuff, because it's the only one that can do it.
Yeah.
In the future, that may change, and I can't predict what will happen in the future. Next year, there will be more devices that can do this, and I don't know how long we will keep on the Nexus 4.
Yeah, that's once a difficult those new, thing, isn't
it's,
it?
It's hard to say.
And what about the Nexus 7? What version of the Nexus 7 is supported?
Good point. Only the 2013 Nexus 7. Okay. So that's actually another option, is actually a tablet might be cheaper. I don't know what the prices of the Nexus 7s and 4s are.
I bought a Nexus 4 at the beginning of this year, and I think it was about £90.
Right.
And I'm very sad that my wife broke the screen on it, because I'd still be using that for, you know, Ubuntu Touch stuff.
Right. Cool.
I'm not sure how to pronounce that.
No, Laura usually does that name.
It's Nadru Majdor.
Nadru Majdor.
Designed the T-shirt I am wearing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right.
Left a comment on the website. Nadru Majdor left a comment on the website at ubuntupodcast.org.
In Bash, one can use Alt plus dot to bring back the last option.
Right, what? So in a previous command line love, I think we spoke about something where you can type a command and then you can do something like bang at, which will then substitute that for the previous options of the last command. Whereas this will effectively paste the options for the last command into the terminal, which means you can then edit.
It does. Yes. I never knew that.
I never knew this either. Cool. That's really handy.
Yeah. So I just tested it. I just opened the terminal, did alt dot.
Yeah.
And it said poopy.com. What? That's a bit weird. And it turns out the last command I did was ssh, poopy.com.
There you go.
It done that. Yeah, so okay, that's pretty cool. Good tip, Nadra Mashdor.
Adam. Oh, dear. I'm very sorry if I'm butchering this. Adam Dimitrik seconded this comment.
This also works with ZSH as well. And if hit repeatedly, will iterate the last arguments going back through the history.
And a puppy goes to test
it. It does as well.
So it's like pressing up, but only for the arguments.
But only for the arguments.
All of the arguments, or just the last argument?
I think it's all of the argument. All of the arguments.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not.
What?
It's only the last.
Oh, the last argument.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm scrolling up and I'm seeing stop and start, which would be service thing start. So it's only the very last thing.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds like a wheeze. What other little key bindings are there in Bash and SH that we don't know about?
Tell us more of these.
These
are good.
Yeah.
I like these.
Nico emailed us on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
I was downloading the new Ubuntu Mate ISO and noticed that the download location was a bit strange. Some wacky url.cloudfront.net. I'm always a little bit paranoid, so since I thought I was downloading from cdimage.ubuntu.com, I googled cloudfront.net to find out what it is. Well, that only made things more confusing, since many of the sites were how to remove CloudFront pop-up virus, etc. So, what is going on, and what is this cloudfront.net, and is it okay, I assume, since Ubuntu is using it, why are people talking about some virus of the same name? Sorry about the stupid question, I'm a bit confused about this, and wanted to ask someone about it.
Right, I know a little bit about this, but not very much, and I assume this is the download of 15.10. But when the release of 15.10 happened, there was about an hour where it all went wrong.
Oh, right.
And people at Canonical were putting their pants on the outsides of their trousers and fixing stuff to do with the mirror network that hosts the ISOs.
Right.
And I think this is using CloudFront to orchestrate all of that mirror replication. So depending on when you actually tried to download the ISO, which you're quite correct, should come from cdimage.ubuntu.com, it was broken for a bit. And there was a message going out saying it's all fixed now. And I took them at their word and then noticed for Ubuntu and Ubuntu Mate, it wasn't actually fixed. And then somebody else did some more tweaking and it all worked again. So there's a small period where it was a bit weird, but it's something to do with the mirror network is orchestrated and managed.
Right. So during the release, one of the steps that the release manager does is tell the IS department to push the images to these cloud providers so that they're cached and we don't, you know, kill our servers with all the traffic that's coming on release day, which, you know, used to happen sometimes.
Yeah.
So, thanks for that.
Cool. And finally, Enrique from Southwest USA left a comment on our website.
Love your show, though I didn't understand when you guys were talking about some sort of popper that you can put in the microwave instead of frying. As we say here in the States, we don't have that there food in this here place.
I should probably elaborate on this a bit further. I was talking about poppadoms. At least in the UK, when you get a curry, an Indian-style curry, you tend to get a bag of poppadoms with it, which are these big sort of crispy bread things.
No.
What's it made of? It's made of
chickpeas or flour. Or maize.
Yeah, it's basically a flatbread which is fried and goes really crispy, and you dip it in mango chutney and other nice sauces as a sort of accompaniment to your curry. Now, the way that these are normally made is they're made in, like, they're nice and flat, and then you pop them in a frying pan full of hot oil, and they go all bubbly and puff up, and then you let them dry out and they go all crisp. My discovery was that if you put them in the microwave, they also pop up and go bubbly and crisp, but without all of the oil and having to wait for it to dry.
Mm. I was surprised that I don't know, maybe it was a sarcastic comment, but surprised that there was, like, you know, probably they haven't had poppadoms over there, or maybe we just, like, didn't pronounce it well.
Very
clear. It wasn't very clear.
Yeah. I think that's all of the feedback.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And that's all for episode 36 and our recording at our camp in person.
Yes.
Audio processing will be back to normal next time. That's all in our little bunkers.
Yes. So we'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment and discussion.
Mm, thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
If you came to our camp too, I hope you enjoyed it.
And probably spoke to you, so lovely to meet you.
Yes, it was actually. It was nice having people come and say, no, I listen to Ubuntu podcast. You know,
yeah.
Or...
I had a few people come by the stand and were asking me questions about Ubuntu and then said, oh, I know your voice. Ah, yes, that's me. So, yeah, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. And stop recording.